start on the Indian of Hagurus Kalim, I'd just like to say a Gemura in Psuchim. Gemura in Psuchim says in Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Omre Ravina Ravashi, Hana Sakinet Piska Heichon Avdina Lehu. Ravina asked Ravashi, the chumistik and knives, how do we prepare them? They should be able to be used for Pesach. Omalei, so Ravashi answered, Lididi Chadatiko Avdina. I have new ones. Omalei, so Ravina said, Tinach Ma De Efshele, it's all very well for the Rebbe who can afford to have new ones. Zilei Efshele Ma, but somebody who can't afford them, what should they do? And the Gemara continues to give the basic halachas of Hagula and Liban. The Poskim are unanimous that from the Gemara one sees clearly that in the first instance, wherever possible, Kalim for Pesach should be Pesachik Kalim. That means either Miyuchad Pesach or new Kalim, and if that is not possible, then there applies the halachas of Hagula and Liban. The halachas of Hagula and Liban all originate in Pesukim in the Torah. There's two Pesukim. One is in Parashas Matos, where the Torah, where Lot HaKohen told the Anshei HaTzuba, who were coming back from Midian and brought with them spoils from the Chemes Midian, he said to them, Kol Dovah Sheyuvah Be'esh Taviru Bo'esh, and Kol HaShelo Yuvah Be'esh Taviru Bo'moyim. We'll soon see that that is the principal halachas of Hagula and Liban. And of course in this week's Tzedra Parashat Tzav, where the Torah talks about the Parashat Chatos, and of course there's a problem that if the Kalim that are used for Chatos are then reused, there'll be a problem of Noisa, which is inside the Kalim. And the Pusuk tells us that the Klicheres Asher Tavushal Bo Yeshuva, that Klicheres that's been used in earthenware Kalim that's been used to cook the Chatos, has to be broken, because earthenware, as we all know, cannot be kashered. And the klichoshes b'sholah, but if it's in copper or in a metal keli, then umoyde k'shutah b'mayim, it's shayach to do hagula. And some learn from that that there's also a chiyuv of tefillah, that is perhaps a makar that tefillah's keli is min ha-toda. Now the reason, as everybody knows, that keli that's been used for duva issa, or that's been used for chumetz during the year, the problem with the keli is that b'shav bishol, when the keli has been used, the blias, the tam that's inside the keli from the food that's being boiled or cooked there, that enters, that's nidla, into the walls of the keli, and if the keli is used again on Pesach, then that tam, that issa, comes out into the machel, and it is also min ha-toyra to eat that machel. How does Hagulas Kalim work? Why is it that if one uses a keli for 51 weeks a year, and for instance one has boiled soup with chumetzik knedlach or dumplings in it that are chumetz, and there's chumetz gummer that is nivla, that is absorbed in the keli, why can one merely take the keli and dunk it in a boiling tank of water, and one can then use it for Pesach? The Mechal ben Shulchan Aruch and Sfarim Kufon Aleph, that deals extensively with the halachas of Hagula, gives the rule of Kifi Tashmishoy Hechsheiroy, that in the same way that the keli was used, in that same way the keli is then kashered. The Poskim call this Kiboloi Kach Poltoi, in the same way that the keli was nivla, became balua, full of the tam of the issa, in that same way it has to be extracted. And this is twofold. One is that the keli has to be heated to the same temperature as it was when the issa went in. So for instance, if it was a pot that was used on boiling on the flame, then the issa will only be removed if it's immersed into another pot that's also on the flame. It must be at the same temperature as it when it went in. That will draw it out again. And the second klal is that it must be under the same circumstances, meaning that it makes an enormous difference if the issa went in through the medium of a liquid, through a mashke, or if it went in dry. Dahainu, in the case, for instance, where one stirred a chumistika soup with a spoon, and this soup was boiling in a pot on the flame, so the blias went into the pot, and it also went into the spoon. That it went in through what is called in Shulchan Aruch a keli rishon, the keli that was immediately on the fire. The only way to remove it is that it must be then put into the boiling water, the spoon and the pot, in order to remove the blius. Boiling water is allowed because the issa went in through boiling water. However, and that is called hagola. However, if the issa didn't go in through water, but in a case of an oven, or for instance a tray inside the oven where one baked challis or cake or biscuits, and the chulitz was lying directly on the tin, on the baking on that tray, then the chumitz did not go in through liquid. The chumitz went in directly through heat into the oven, into the sides of the oven or into the tray, and there hagola is not effective because it didn't go in through a liquid, it went in through direct dry heat, and the only way to extract that would be through libun. There are two types of libun. Libun is purging in fire, and there are two types. Normally when we talk about libun, we're talking about libun chuma. That is strict libun, that is to take that baking tray and to pass it through fire and to hold it there until, as Chazal tell us, ad shitahei nitzoitzois nitzozum emeno, until sparks are emitted from the tray. That is be'erach, a temperature that Mumchim say of 700 degrees Fahrenheit, which equates to more or less just slightly over 370 degrees centigrade. The simon that is happening is when the metal starts to glow. There are cases when libun kal is necessary, and libun kal is a light libun, which is a lower temperature, and the siman for that is Chazal say ad shetehei kash nisraf mebachutz. That means that the keli would be held in a fire, not until, you don't have to hold it until it becomes red hot, but until, if you took a piece of straw or a piece of tissue paper and you held it on the outside of that vessel that's being held in the fire, the paper or the straw would either catch fire or at least become scorched. That is libun kal. That is only used when essentially one would really need to do hagola, because the issa went into a liquid, but one can't do hagola because hagola is either impossible or impractical. The mushul, if you've got a keli that's got a groove in it, inside the keli, then it's very, very difficult to clean. And before you would do hagola, you would do libun kal on that groove, meaning you would take a blowtorch and pass it over the groove very slowly to make sure that any chumitz that is there is burnt. That is generally when libun kal is used. For all other cases where the chumitz went in either with no liquid or with very little liquid or with very little oil, it's considered dry and libun chumah has to be used. Now, whilst we're talking about the problem of a keli that's got a groove in it, that also applies to handles of cutlery which are on two parts, where there's a groove between the handle and the main part of the blade, that also has to be looked at very carefully. The reason for that is that if somebody thinks that he's going to do Hagolas Kelim, and it's a keli which is particularly difficult to clean, and he thinks to himself, I've tried my best and now it's going to be immersed in a boiling tank of water, surely that's going to take care of any chumitz on the keli. That is a serious mistake. It doesn't work. Hagola only works, only has an effect on the blius, on the tam, on the issa, which is absorbed in the walls of the keli. On actual physical chumitz, if there is even the smallest speck of chumitz, a mashahu, stuck somewhere in the corner, then hagola has no effect. And if one kashes that keli, then the kashering is useless. The keli remains chumitz. The keli has to be absolutely 100% clean. And in a case where it's difficult to clean, one would have to ask the shala to see whether libun kal, whether using a blowtorch, is going to solve the problem. For instance, many pots have got engraved on the bottom the manufacturer's stamp, and that engraved area is notoriously difficult to clean. You just can't get into it, and one would certainly have to use a blowtorch to burn out the chumetz that's in that area. If you don't use a blowtorch to burn out the chumetz, the hagola is not going to be effective, and you haven't got Pesach Yekeli. If we can just speak for a moment about sinks. Now, I'm sure you've all read the book, but and one's familiar, but let's just go over it very quickly. Tekasha sinks, and I'm now referring to sinks that are stainless steel sinks. If somebody has got, this is the, I'm talking now to the MFI brigade, the Shenari Eden, who've got the reconstituted granite, or the real granite, or the Korea and the Kedoma, need to ask a shawla or enamel how to deal with those sinks. I'm speaking now about stainless steel sinks. Stainless steel sinks need, and that goes for the draining area as well, need to be thoroughly cleaned first. Then, there could be a problem, as we all know, that particularly on Pesach for some reason, the sink gets blocked and you get the whatever went down the trap comes back up again. That is a very serious problem, and in order that that shouldn't cause a shower, the shower, the cleaning, you pour a generous amount of bleach down the plug hole, and also if there's an overflow, you pour it down there as well. Now, in the area where the plug hole meets the sink, there is a groove where the two pieces of metal come together, and there's usually a rubber gasket to seal it. Now, that is an example of a place where there is a groove in the keli that you're kashering. Ideally, that would lend itself to lib and kal, and you would need to take a blowtorch in order to clean out that area, because it's very difficult to do that just with to scrape it with a knife or something, or with a screwdriver or with a pin. It's very difficult to do that. However, if you were to attempt that, you would of course be left with a severe plumbing problem, because you would melt the rubber gasket. So you need again to put a generous amount of bleach in that area in order that any chumetz that's belua, or that's trapped in that area, should become a noisen tam of gum, should become, as far as Minatoyer is concerned, that chumetz is no longer considered issa once it's become deteriorated through the bleach. Having cleaned the sink, one then removes the strainer. The strainer needs to be cleaned and removed, and practically speaking, it's a good idea to get a new strainer for Pesach, in order that again you shouldn't get peels of fruit or whatever goes down there blocking up the sink. The sink is then dried, and this is a klal in all hagolah. The whatever you're doing hagolah on, whatever you're doing the kashering on, must be dry, completely dry. The reason for that is that any cold water left on the surface then lowers the temperature of the hot water as it meets it, and we don't want the temperature to be lowered. We want the temperature to be absolutely bubbling hot. So it has to be dried and left for 24 hours. And the balabusters usually cover the sink that's going to be kashered with a board, or with a bit of cardboard, or with a plastic sheet, in order that everybody should know that you shouldn't open the tap and use the sink in that 24-hour period. After the 24-hour period, one boils up a kettle. The minig is that you first fill up the kettle and you boil it. And
with cold water, you can use it, the sink.
You can use the cold water, the sink, but it's good practice not to use the sink at all, because if you use cold, you may use hot, and then you've ruined the hiddah of the 24 hours, the 24-hour period. You then, if it's not possible, then you'll have to use it cold, but you have to be very careful not to use it for hot water, because it would be a shame to ruin the Einu Bin Yoimai. I'll explain that in a moment. You then boil up a kettle full of water, you pour the water out, and you boil it again. That is, at least to have a basic hachshora on the kettle that you're going to use, that in case the kettle is chumetz thick — kettles are mostly not chumetz thick, but there can be a problem with the steam if you pour it directly onto chumetz — and one then kashes the kettle merely by boiling it and pouring out the water and then boiling it again. You can then kasher the sink by pouring the boiling water over the areas that you need to kasher the sink and the draining board. The minig is that Mori Harua advised that when you're kashering the taps or the sink mixer, one puts on the boiling water, the hot tap at that time, since any chumetz that may have gone into it probably went in when the hot tap was being used, so you put the hot tap so that it should be taken out at the same time, in the same way when the hot tap is being used. Many Mori Harua, and you'll see this in many pamphlets, say that additionally one should use an Evan Meluban, that is a red hot stone that's been held with tongs in a fire or a piece of metal, and that is passed over the sink at the same time as one is doing the hakshura, as one is pouring the hot water. Many people are very apprehensive about the Evan Meluban part. It's not pleasant to be handling a red hot stone and to be working around it. There is a kula that is from the Gedola HaDoyer, and Yerushalayim in particular, they use this kula, and again, although this is a kula, this has to be done very carefully, and then one can dispense with a red hot stone. And what one does is, by using an extension cable, one uses best to use something like a Shabbos urn that's got a fair capacity of water, and again you fill it up and you pour out the water and you then fill it up again. And you can then, whilst the kettle is on, pass slowly over the area that you're going to kasher, and kasher it with the boiling water that's coming out from the kettle whilst it's switched on. This is not something which is recommended by the Health and Safety Board. It has to be done very, very carefully, and any kashering at home needs really to be done through a two-person team, because the person who's doing kashering needs to be watched from behind to see exactly what's going on, that he isn't pouring hot water over any plugs or over any anything at all, and over his shoes. It has to be done very, very carefully. The idea of this is that those who insist that there has to be even a lubun, there has to be a red hot stone, so the fact that the element is switched on, that compensates for not having the red hot stone. Kashering is the kashering the sink most people are familiar with. Kashering kalim is far more complicated, and it should not really be attempted at home. There is the rabbonim in most locations have organized a public kashering. There's one in Metashem tomorrow evening between 5 and 7 at 213 Volsgin Road. That's Wednesday, that's Thursday evening, and again at the same time between 5 and 7 on Sunday evening. And there's a Mori Harua in attendance to be able to examine the kalim that are being kashered. Not all kalim can be kashered. Wednesday. Sorry. And again on Sunday between 5 and 7. Now, what's important to remember is the one that's before Pesach this week, you say it's this evening, is not a problem. There you will take any kalim that you want to kasher, and of course they're not going to be used again before Pesach. The thing that one needs to point out is that on the one that's going to be on Sunday, there we want the kalim to be Einei Ben Yoymai, and I'll briefly explain why we want the kalim to be Einei Ben Yoymai. The reason for that is that when you kasher a keli, the blia, the issa, the chumetz that absorbed in the keli, comes out. The rule is that a keli that is torud, that is busy emitting its blias, is unable to absorb anything at the same time because he's too busy giving it out. However, the moment he's given everything out, then this vessel starts to absorb from the liquid that he's immersed in. Now, it is impossible for us to know when this keli stops giving out and starts to absorb. If it starts to absorb, then the chumetz that has gone into the boiling tank of water is now going to go back in to the keli. In order to avoid that happening, we leave the keli for 24 hours. The kalas and Shulchan Aruch that a blias and a tam, an issa that's absorbed in a keli. Now, we're not talking about anything which is mamushes be'en, actual chumetz. Actual chumetz can remain perfectly good for weeks on end, stuck to the side of the keli. We're talking about the tam, the blia, that's absorbed in the keli. That bliya that's absorbed in the keli after 24 hours is called in Shulchan Aruch a noisen tam lefgam. That is a stale taste, and al pi Torah, when that taste comes out into a machel, the machel is not also to eat. Now, since we want this, in case it starts to reabsorb the ister that it gave out from the boiling water, we want it at least to be a moistened tam lefgam. It should be a stale taste when it goes back in again. In addition to that, we don't even want a stale taste to go back in again on Pesach. So what we do is that the Moir HaRoah, who's doing the kashering, who's supervising the kashering, is careful that there should be a minimum of 60 times the volume of the keli that's being kashered, 60 times that volume of water. And the klal is that before Pesach, chumetz becomes annulled, becomes bottle, nullified in 60 times the amount, bottle b'shishim. So it's belts and braces what we have here. We have a nice tam of gum coming out. We don't want even that bad tam going back in again, and so we put it into 60 times as much water in order that that bad tam, even if it does go back in again, will first be nullified, and al pi Shulchan Aruch, it is not counted at all what goes back inside. That's not an issa whatsoever. So going back to the kelim that are going to be used, the silverware and the mushal that will be used this Shabbos, if somebody wants to kasher it in the kashering at on Sunday between 5 and 7, he should not use those kelim longer or any later than the main meal on Shabbos morning. And the main meal on Shabbos morning by most people is over by 2:33 o'clock, so that is at least 24 hours before the kashering starts the following day at 5 o'clock. The main thing to remember is that once those kelim have been used and the pot or whatever it is has been emptied and put into the sink, Motzei Shabbos, that when it needs to be cleaned in preparation for the kashering, must not be cleaned in boiling water. Because if you clean it in boiling water, you start the clock ticking again, and you've achieved nothing by having the 24 hours, because Motzei Shabbos is going to be roughly 9 o'clock, and you will then have started the 24 hour clock ticking again by immersing it in hot water or by washing it in hot water. So what you should do is to be careful to wash it in lukewarm water with soap, and one can do a very good job without boiling water. And of course it should also not be placed in the dishwasher, because the dishwasher, the water is hot enough to cause a problem. If somebody forgets, then the best thing is to inform the Rav who's going to oversee the kashering that this is the Eina Bin Yomai. I'd like to speak for a few minutes on ovens. Ovens, I'm going to ignore for the moment the problem of enamel. Most of our ovens are enamel coated, which means the sides of the ovens are metal, and the coating is enamel, which is essentially earthenware. Earthenware is in this week's Sedra that earthenware cannot be kashered. There's a very big machloket. There's nothing new about this. This is brought down in the Poskim roughly 100 years ago, even a bit earlier than that. But some Sofer, the Shlomo Kluger, all talk about the problem of enamel. Let's leave that problem of enamel for the moment. Many of you may have noticed that there is an anomaly as far as ovens are concerned. You can have two families living next to each other. They've got both exactly the same model oven. One goes up to ask his Rav, can he kasher it? And he's told, yes, you can kasher it for Pesach. You clean it out with a caustic oven cleaner. The trays should be removed, and either you do libum until it becomes red hot in fire, or preferably you buy new trays. You leave it for 24 hours. You put it onto its highest setting, and then you can use it for 2 hours, and you leave the oven on for 2 hours on the highest setting, and that is the kashering, and you can then use the oven. There are many Meiroroa and Rabbona who pass like that. Other Rabbonim will answer that in the first instance, try to avoid using it. Get yourself a baby belling, do something else, not have to use the oven. If there's no choice, then you do everything as I mentioned a moment ago, plus you have to double wrap the food that you're going to cook or bake in the oven. And the ladies don't like that, because it's not, especially in baking, if you start to mess about with double wrapping, you don't get a very good result. And if you can't double wrap, then they advise to either purchase or to somehow make an insert where you've got the box that completely surrounds the item that's being cooked or baked on all six sides. Now, why is there this disparity that some allow the kashering and some allow the kashering only in conjunction with double wrapping or covering the food with an insert? And Moshe Feinstein and his tshuva allows kashering only if that is also supplemented by an insert into the oven, and not to have the food in the oven in the same way as you use it all year round. The Moriru in America say that Rabbi Aaron Kotler was Mekel. Why is there this difference of opinion? This difference of opinion is based on a yesodistic and machloikis on how Liban works. The Liban that is through Eish, how does that work? Hagula, as we said, works by the boiling water, extracting the issa that's trapped inside the walls of the keli. It takes it out and it destroys it in the boiling water. Now the question is, does Liban work on that same way? And that's not clear in the poskim. One could say that Liban also works through kibole kachpoltoi. It came in through heat, and heat would extract the issa into the outside and will destroy it in the heat. Or no, when it goes through heat, Chazal tells us that the only way to deal with it is ad shitahein tzoytzeis netozim emena, until it becomes red hot. And until it becomes red hot, you're not going to burn the issa. The reason is that Liban does not work in the same way as Hagula, that the issa is drawn out, but rather the heat enters the sides of the keli and it burns the issa inside the sides of the keli. And this makes an enormous difference, because the mushel, if you use your oven, generally speaking, at 350 degrees, according to the first opinion, Kabbalah Kachpeltoi, you could then kasher the oven by setting it to 350 or 380 or 400, just to be on the safe side, and that will draw out the issa that went in by 350, will be drawn out, and it's going to burn the issa, the chumetz. If, however, you say that's not how Liban works, Liban works by the heat burning the issa inside the oven, it makes no difference at what temperature it went in. If it went in through heat and it went in dry, it needs to have Liban. And Chazal tell us that Liban is ad shitahenet tzeitzis netozimenu. The only way to destroy the chumetz inside the walls of the oven is to burn it to 700 degrees roughly. And that is impossible to do with the modern ovens. Even if you were to try to do it with a blowtorch, you would end up, as one Yigaman found out to his cost, that he did try to do it, and literally the sides of the oven went pear-shaped. It cannot take that sort of direct heat, and he was left with an oven where you could only use the bottom of the oven. You couldn't use the side because the tray wouldn't fit in, because it was now 50% wider than it was before. You cannot, it doesn't work. That is the machlokes on how to deal with the oven. I'd also like to try to speak for under 2 minutes on a shaula. I'm not coming out now with a new chumrah, just to bring this to your attention, that in most of the pamphlets that talk about Agolas Kalim and Liban, also mention braces, and I'm talking about removable braces and dentures, the way how to kasher that. Areas are familiar, many of the Rabbonim include this in their Shabbos Agolas Rosha. What is spoken less about is the same problem with crowns and fillings. It must be obvious that the same chumetz that causes a problem to a brace and to a denture is going to do the same to crowns and fillings. And this is something which generally is not spoken about, and it is a plia atzuma why it's not spoken about. There is Reb Shlomo Zalman Oibach wrote a letter some 70 years ago to the day. It was Nissan 1936. He wrote a letter to Chazanish. If someone's got access to the Mincha Shloime Chelik Beit Siman Mem Vuv, one doesn't have to be an expert in Yoredei to understand it. It's beautifully written, and he examines this problem from all the tzuvim, and he looks at the kumas, how one deals with this problem. The Chazanish did not answer on this letter, and the Mishpachas Greinemann say that the reason the Chazanish did not reply to this letter was because he said to his family that he's received a letter from the Yerushalayim Yid. He had no idea at that time what Reb Shlomo Zalman Oibach was. He was a young man at that time, and it was so comprehensive that he couldn't think of anything to add to this letter. Shlomo Zalman Talmud that according to the chumras that we have on Pesach, the problem of fillings and crowns fall well within the parameters of the chumras that we have on Pesach. And he says, and Moshe Sternbuch in his Haggadah also talks about this, except I think at the time he didn't know about the Shlomo Zalman's letter because it hadn't been published yet. He says that ideally one needs to leave out any hot chumetz for 24 hours before Pesach, at least that the tam that goes into the fillings and crowns should be a moistened tam l'stam, so not to eat any hot pizzas or any hot chumetz for 24 hours before the night of Pesach. Now I'd just like to read out that in addition to that he says something very interesting, and he says, I'm going to read out his words, nearly shenuchem ma'oid lishtos ma'at ma'im chamel fnei Pesach, one should drink a little bit of, I suppose he means rinse out one's mouth with a little bit of hot water before Pesach, that means on Erev Pesach afternoon, shechomam hu kemoi shiruga lishtos tumid, the heat of this water should be at the temperature that he would normally drink, and some people can manage to drink tea without milk, which is very very hot, and they would be doing this with that same temperature. Some people leave it for a few minutes before they attempt to drink it. And in order to have at least that hot water to do some sort of hagola on the shinayim. It's very, very interesting. It's not brought down in all the pamphlets, and it's something to think about. The main thing is that an enormous amount of yigia and trouble goes into the preparations for Pesach, particularly by the Mishnah Tumah. So, b'schus that, we should be zoicher k'meitzei tenu me'ez etzayim v'ren and floyes v'viyas go tzedek v'mheri v'meni umat.